Hello, everybody. This is John, and I am happy to be here again, gathered together in this remarkable venue to speak about reality. Carla had a little bit of trouble with her microphone earlier, so let's check and make sure that everybody can hear her now. Carla, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Oh, that's good news. Yes, we can hear you good. Okay. So moving along. You know, I have asked that rather than try to communicate with me by text messages while we are in the room here, because that's kind of distracting and it's difficult for me, and I think it's difficult for everybody else to follow the thrust of what we're talking about. And I've asked that instead of that, that if you don't have a microphone, or if you want me to speak about something in the next meeting, that you write to me by email at the address online at riverganga.org. And I have three emails here this morning that I'm going to read to you, and we can talk about them a little bit. It's a great gift to me when you speak to me. It's a great gift to me when you write to me and tell me what it is that that you want to have discussed, that you want to have considered and reflected upon in these venues. You see, for me, it's what I have to say is so little and so simple and so repetitive that I need help to get a sense of what you need to hear. So write to me, as these people did, and keep in touch with me. And if you can talk to me here this afternoon, talk to me here this afternoon. So, moving on, as they say. An email to me. Good morning, John. I was sitting still this morning, and in the stillness, I experienced the obviousness of what is very clearly. I experience it all the time now, and I am aware of it, where before it was like getting fleeting glimpses of truth. Clarity would come, and then it would go. But now, even when the clarity goes, I am still here, and I know it. Now I realize what you mean by, it is never not. Could you please cover the topic of the obviousness of truth in every moment that is often overlooked in the search of something outside? I will. We'll talk about that. I'm going to read all of these emails because it's my experience that we all have the same issues and the same questions, and that there really is a very narrow band of the characteristics of the questions that we have to ask in this practice, which is not surprising since this practice itself is so small, so uncomplicated, so simple. And the questions that arise are all from a place of complication and whatever the opposite of simplicity is. But all of them track the same way. So let me read the rest of these emails. Hi, John. I found you a couple of months ago, and I'm so very grateful for the self-inquiry practice that you are passing on to us from Ramana. I come to this practice with over 25 years of spiritual baggage, having been on an Advaita Vedanta path for that period. My spiritual practices involve things like discriminating between the real and the transient, letting go of the unreal, e.g., neti-neti, mantra meditation, service, conscious activity in the world. The idea on this path is that eventually the individual will realize the one universal self of all things and then merge into pure consciousness, i.e. become fully realized. Well, to be perfectly honest, I can't see myself getting fully realized anytime soon. And I have to say, as an aside, that I can't see anybody getting fully realized anytime soon either. That is a chimera. It's a false goal. You are the realization of reality. You have always been the realization of reality. And any effort that begins with the intent of becoming what you already are, well, must fail. Has to fail. To go on with this email. What I find really wonderful about self-inquiry is the simple confirmation that I already am what I've been looking for all this time. I am here and have always been here. I don't need to look elsewhere for me. Also, I love the fact that I can just get on with the practice by myself. However, the simplicity sometimes gets smothered with all the other spiritual habits I've developed over the years. For example, remembering the one self of all, or resting in the present moment. I feel in some ways I would be better off never having heard all of that. Well, maybe so, but you have to see that we have acquired a habit of putting anything that smacks of the spiritual in a category of its own, something apart from all the other things we're doing, something different and new that has a different foundation and a different expression and a different goal, a higher goal, a more, well, spiritual goal. The truth is the spiritual practice is just one of the many practices that we are constantly engaging in, day by day, moment by moment, second by second, trying to maintain some satisfactory sense of what I am, some satisfactory sense of what my life is and what it means to me and what it can give me and what it is, what it threatens to take away from me. That all of our life is spent engaged in these practices that sometimes take a kind of spiritual coloration to them, and sometimes have a philosophical coloration to them, and sometimes have a material coloration to them, and sometimes have just a kind of dumb coloration to them. But always we are engaging in these practices. Always we are trying to hold on to what feels good and get rid of what feels bad. That's what we do. That is all there is to these personalities, is finding new strategies and tactics and new structures whereby I can be more effective at getting what feels good and getting rid of what feels bad. And that's why, that's what we are doing when we are looking for love. That's what we are doing when we are looking for highs and states of bliss. That's what we are doing when we are earning a living, when we are cooking our meals, when we are reading our books, when we are practicing our meditation. We are exploring these different ways that we can protect ourselves from what we don't want and hold to ourselves what we do want. So it is kind of incomprehensible to me that we would make this artificial distinction between spiritual practice and all the other practices that we participate in life, and decide that spiritual practice, probably because it is, after all, well, higher than all the other practices, we somehow decide that spiritual practice has a special power to prevent us from being what we already are and already have been. You see, even when I am even when my deep spiritual understanding of things and my deep appreciation of the metaphysical wonder of it all is in the center of my attention, even when the experiences here that this person speaks of as smothering over the simplicity of the self-inquiry, no matter what seems to be being smothered over, you are here. No matter what practices you are engaging in on a day-to-day basis, whether you are out earning your living or learning to sing in the choir or trying to score some dope or whatever you're doing, the spiritual practice is no different from any of that. Now, the truth is that all of those practices are absolutely beside the point of the inquiry. What is it to you if the simplicity of the inquiry sometimes gets smothered over with all the other spiritual habits, or gets smothered over with all the other psychological habits or romantic habits or any of the other habits that I attend to? What does that matter to you? What is it about that experience that causes you distress? What is it about this smothering that needs to be banished and gotten rid of? I say none of it needs to be banished. None of it needs to be gotten rid of. All that needs to be done is to have the direct, fresh, unmediated perception of the reality of what you are as often as you can. And all the rest of this will be taken care of by that. So, would you be better off if you had not been taken by this spiritual understanding? I don't see how. I don't see how anything whatsoever that you do or don't do in these human lives touch you or affect you, help you or hurt you in any way at all. The point of the inquiry is not to present to you something that you must choose over everything else. It's not that self-inquiry is superior to all the other spiritual practices, and therefore all the other spiritual practices or understandings or any of that have to be banished. It is that self-inquiry has nothing to do with all the other spiritual practices, has nothing to do with all the other material and romantic and philosophical practices, has nothing to do with anything at all, except the possibility of having the direct conscious awareness of reality as often as possible. And the promise is that the light of truth will do the work that's needed within your life, within your mind. You don't have to worry about that. That's not your business. The email goes on to say, I feel the need to introduce some real fire and determination into the practice to really try and see myself. You've mentioned this aspect in previous meetings. Do you have any tips for the spiritually jaded like me? And can you also speak more about this aspect of determination that's required in the practice? Well, determination is a good thing. What's really required, and what I'm really saying when I speak like that, what's really required is intention. Not so much determination as intention. That's what I mean by that. Intention is that when you turn your attention inward, when you turn your attention looking for this ever-present reality, that it is your intention to see reality. That's all. In other words, it's not something that comes to you as a kind of side effect of some other thing that you're doing or not doing, that your intention in that moment, even if that moment is vanishingly small, and even if those moments are few in number over time, what's required is that in those moments when it occurs to you to look at yourself, not so much for yourself as at yourself, that you see that that's what you're doing. You are, with full intention, trying to see the reality of what you are, trying to receive, to apperceive, to feel, to, you know, that all of those words are not, are too gross for what I'm speaking of. But you see that what you're doing is you're trying to see yourself. You're trying to let the light of the truth into this, to this life, to this, this human being. So it's not determination, although determination can be, actually, I think it can be a two-edged sword. When I happened upon this possibility while I was in prison, my determination was very big. I was filled with energy and determination and desire to see reality. It's not my experience, however, that the energetic nature of that helped me one way or the other. What helped me was my intention to see reality, which, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but once that intention is in place, the breathtaking, unbelievable possibility that confronts you once you, once it forms in you that you really want to see the light of truth, the breathtaking, fundamental possibility that kind of slaps you in the face with that, on its own, generates the desire and the energy that you're speaking of here, the determination. Because there's nothing else. Really, there's nothing else of any interest anywhere except this reality that you are, that you have always been. The addiction to spiritual understanding, it will take care of itself. It will pass. You don't need to worry about it. You don't need to do anything about it. And then I have an email here that parts of which I don't quite understand, and I don't know whether the person who wrote to me is here today, but if you are and you're listening to this, you might ask for voice once I'm done with this time that I have here and clarify these things for me. This is someone who found us on YouTube, which is actually, it always tickles me when I see the value that those clips on YouTube have, how many people have come to us as a result of those clips. The email says, in meditation, it has sometimes happened that any sense of me has disappeared, which was a very peaceful state, for want of a better word. In that condition, no questions arise and peace is felt, and once or twice that remained after returning to normal or usual activities. But such occasions have been rare, and I was astonished to hear you say that at some point the, quote, self-talk, if you don't mind me calling it that, disappeared entirely. Which is, I believe, what I am hoping to experience as my default state. Now, this is the part that's a little confusing to me because I really have a hard time understanding what you might be referring to as self-talk and something I said, or that something disappeared entirely. I really am confused about that because I don't know self-talk because I really don't know what you're talking about. But the thing about some negative aspect, some negative characteristic of your mind, of your life, of the way your mind operates, the idea that some negative aspect of this will eventually disappear entirely is, well, there's just no basis for it. I mean, things do disappear, but they always have disappeared. We do remember some things and forget other things throughout our lives. So some habits will disappear, and others won't disappear. They'll return again and again and again. But that's true anyway. That's just the nature of conditioned existence. It is conditioned, and everything that occurs within these lives occurs as a result of an incomprehensibly complicated web of cause and effect. That's what's meant by conditioned existence. And as that web shifts and changes and moves and so forth, so too do the habits and practices of what seems to be the individual personality. But the idea that the goal of your practice is to have some negativity disappear forever doesn't make any sense. You, just as you are, you, here, in this moment, just as you are, you that never, ever disappears, you are what you seek. The coming and going of aspects of personality, the coming and going of states and experiences, raptures and depressions and so forth, none of those things have any effect on you. They are mechanical, and finally, not very interesting. The internal writhing of the personality as it changes once and doesn't get and all of that. It really, it doesn't matter. It's beside the point. The one of the greatest misdirections in our lives is this endless attempt, this endless energetic determination to do something about the states or the habits or the patterns of behavior that constitute my mind. We know very well that there's nothing we can do about those things because we have lifetimes of practice trying. What you can do, just look at yourself. Look at what never disappears. Don't concern yourself with what disappears. Everything disappears but you. Don't concern yourself with trying to rid yourself of those things that will disappear anyway. Negative aspects, negative habits, and so forth. Just look at the truth. Look at reality. Look at the light. Just that. Your default state is no state. Your default state is this permanence, this permanent presence. Now the email goes on to say, but I have read and believe it to be true that any effort at all must necessarily enmesh me in thinking anymore. Well, yes, any effort at all to do something about your thinking is guaranteed to enmesh you in thinking even more. So it appears that meditation is not really helping me. Well, meditation cannot help you in any ultimate or fundamental sense. It can help in making the mind itself a little sweeter and a little more porous and generous and so forth, but it can't help you be finished with trying to be finished. But it can't hurt you either. Meditation isn't the problem. Spiritual understanding isn't the problem. Effort isn't the problem. Bad habits aren't the problem. The problem, the only problem, is a false belief about what you are. And nothing whatsoever that's done in any other realm can have any effect on that. The only solution to the false belief about what you are must be, obviously, has to be, the truth, the light of truth. So the endless preoccupation with what's going on in my understanding, in my mind, and whether I'm efforting or not efforting, whether I'm practicing or meditating or not practicing or meditating, oh, that's okay. It really can help you, but it can't hurt you either. If you will look at yourself as often as you can, eventually, no matter how hard you try to stay entangled with that whole display, no matter how hard you try, the light of truth will take that away from you. It continues, but your interest in it radically lessens. The logical outcome of appreciating, the email says, of appreciating that effort is counterproductive and non-doing, which is what meditation seems to be to this mind, is that nothing need be done at all. Well, I don't know. Meditation is certainly not non-doing. And I don't know anybody who has ever figured out how to stop doing. I mean, at least insofar as I understand doing to be the activities, actions, and reactions and so forth of the personality, of the personal apparatus. I don't know of anybody that has had any success in stopping that, maybe momentarily. All the doing is in the mind. The mind comes and goes in you. Therefore, all the doing is secondary, beside the point, to the central matter, which is the reality of what you are. First, see that. And if you discover that you are the person and the mind and the life and the body and so forth, then go forth with a newly energized determination to do something about those things. But first, find out what you are. First, look at yourself directly. See what you are. You know, it's a mistake. I make this mistake all the time. I say, find out what you are, or look at yourself, or see what you are, or all of that. But all of that really is nonsense. There's never a time. There is never, ever, not in deep sleep, not at any time, ever, that you are not fully aware of the reality of what you are. Never. This is the obviousness that's spoken of in that first email. The absolute, unmitigated obviousness and familiarity of reality. You are always seeing only reality. You are always seeing only yourself. There is no time ever that you are not fully, that your consciousness itself is not full of the light of reality. There's never a time when your consciousness itself is not the actual light of reality itself. The inquiry in the end brings you to the discovery of what's never been missing, the discovery of what has never been absent. But the fact that you are always seeing it does not seem to stop us from saying, I don't see it, I don't see it, I need to get it, I need something. I need to wake up. I need to do something. It's the obviousness that causes that. It's because it is so, you are so ever-present, so never absent. You are the background, the sea, space in which all of this appears and disappears, comes and goes. The seeing of yourself is what you do, always. So the task before anyone who wishes, the task before anyone who wishes to interest anyone else in the possibilities that are inherent in this practice of self-inquiry is somehow to point to what it is that we, that I, want you to see that is already here. Somehow to either kind of, if I were more eloquent and more had a better facility at speaking about these subtle and ineffable matters. I might be able to do this more directly. But in the absence of that, mostly what I have to do is catch you by surprise. It's just a somehow, as we speak to each other, as we meet with each other, as I speak in this way, somehow, to catch you by surprise so that, like, as if out of the corner of your eye, as if out of the corner of your eye, you see this endless seeing. And that's all it takes, because you see, it's not necessary that you understand it. It's not necessary that you see how it relates to you or how it fits into your life or how it doesn't fit into your life. It's not necessary that you endlessly scrutinize your progress to determine whether you have transformed yourself into Buddha mind or not. It's not necessary that you stop doing that either. So long as you will, as often as possible, from time to time, catch this glimpse of yourself, of the light, of this light that you are. It is the light that does the work. You're catching a glimpse of yourself is the opening something so that the light can come in and illuminate the false and disinfect it and destroy it. So, lacking any direct way to describe you or define you or tell you in what location to look or where to go or how to do this, lacking any possibility of that, I say to you again and again, you're here, are you not? How do you know that? Well, how can you with such assurance say that you exist? How? What gives you that assurance? You are here. You are never absent. Is that not the truth? See. Look and see. And I say these things because I know from my own experience that these questions carry within them the possibility of kind of catching you by surprise. What would you say if I said to you, if I told you that if every once in a while, whenever it occurs to you to do so, you know, you don't have to stop doing anything else, but just whenever it occurs to you to do so, I want you to, wherever you are, wherever you go in the course of your daily routine, when this thought occurs to you, I want you to touch your right earlobe with your left little finger. And if I told you that if you will do that over a period of time, just whenever it occurs to you, you don't have to make a big deal of it. You can make a big deal of it, but you don't have to. But if you will do that over a period of time, the outcome and the effect of that will be that you will discover that you will discover the ever-present, unmoving, total satisfaction in existence. You will discover not new, the same as it has always been, this ever-present satisfaction with existence, this certainty that existence is not a false promise. What would you say if I told you that if you'll just do that as often as you can think of it, and you don't have to give me any money, and you don't have to give me your firstborn child, and you don't have to drink any Kool-Aid or anything, but just while you're going about your day-to-day business, whatever you think of it, touch your left little finger to your right earlobe. And over time, you will discover, without ever being able to connect this discovery with the touching of your earlobe with your finger, you will discover that there is inexpressible magnificence and wonder to this being that has nothing to do with the shape of your mind, has nothing to do with the way you think about things, with your opinion of things. It has nothing to do with whether you feel like your understanding is smothered by spiritual understanding or any other understanding. Would you do that? Would you? I mean, why not, right? No skin off your nose or really off your earlobe either. Would you do that? Because what I am asking you to do is just as simple and just as impossible to relate to satisfaction and fulfillment and the fulfilled promise of life as touching your earlobe with your left little finger has. But the difference is that if you will, whenever it occurs to you, just see if you cannot catch a glimpse out of the corner of your eye of this eternal, spacious reality that never moves, never changes, is never hurt or helped by anything that occurs in life. And that is you. And it's easy. Truth is, it is every bit as easy as touching the right earlobe with the left little finger. You are, after all, here. You are, after all, never absent. So if you will look at that, if you will just open your eyes, not look as in try to find, but look. Open your eyes to what's always here. Over time, you'll see. Existence is the fundamental satisfaction of reality. Life is a true promise. And you are Well, you are what you are. Look and see. Okay, I'm going to kind of shut up here. I've been going on for quite a while, so I'm going to just kind of stop talking. And if you want to talk to me about any of this that I have spoken about so far, or if you have something entirely apart from that that you want to talk about, just as do as Carla told you to request voice. I think you go to a menu, probably the self menu, and choose the correct voice option. And I'll be happy to talk to you. I am really, really happy to talk to you people. I'm really happy to hear from you. You give me everything. You are the breath of this work. Okay, your turn.
Okay, our first caller is Michelle in Vancouver.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, John. Hi, John.
Hi, Michelle. It's quite delightful to see you here. I was pushing the wrong key down. Welcome. What can I do for you?
When you spoke just now about the obviousness of it, it is so clear, and your message comes through so clearly. You know, you don't have to be eloquent. Truth does not need eloquence. It is you, John. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to hear that. Okay, anything else?
I'm just so thrilled to be here. I just want to say I love you, and I'm so glad to see all these people from all around the world, and keep doing what you're doing. It's helped so many people, and it's helped me, and I just hope that your message spreads everywhere in the world.
Well, me too. I love you too, Michelle, and I hope it spreads everywhere in the world too. You know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that in the 10,000 years or so that human beings have been keeping track of what they do, that nothing we have ever done has been of any use to us whatsoever in putting an end to the sanity that seems to be the main characteristic of human life. This alone, this action alone puts an end to that. And I pray that the whole world have the opportunity just to that. I love this venue. I love meeting with it. It's amazing, all these people from all over the world. Okay, Michelle, thank you. Everybody else?
Okay, now we have Arnell calling from San Diego.
Arnell, what a delight to see you here. Well, you seem to be having a little difficulty with your microphone, but I don't know what to tell you except keep trying and use the self-test mode in settings and raise your hand again because I'd love to talk to you. Seems like I haven't seen you in a while. Anybody else? Hi, Chris.
Now we have. Oh, there's been a collision here. We have Chris calling from Melbourne.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
I hear you well.
Can you hear me, John?
I can hear you well.
Last time I tried and it didn't work, and then I put on this morning it wasn't working, and just this minute it's just started working, so that's great.
Yeah, that is great.
I was actually wanting to talk to you about a little bit about karma and things like that, which I know you don't sort of get into, and I can see a very good reason why you don't, because you're giving people the most direct and effective method. But I'm wondering why so many other teachers do teach it and say that it is relevant and that it does have an effect. And one of the reasons why I was thinking you might see the logic in that is that, for instance, certain actions that we do or thoughts that we have, as opposed to just seeing directly, if the state of seeing directly didn't affect all those other aspects of our life, you know, how we feel about ourselves and about the world in general, which it does as a kind of byproduct, then that sort of shows that there is some sort of relationship there. So doesn't that mean that it would also work the other way, even though it's not as effective as the method you're teaching? So in a way, why bother with it? Well, why not just do the most powerful thing? I understand that. But for some people, maybe that's a problem or that's difficult or they can't get it or something, so they need these other methods. Just wondering if what your comment is on that.
Well, see, the thing is this. If it's possible, I tell anybody this, if it's possible for you to be more loving with people, to turn the other cheek, to give love and comfort and encouragement and all of that, then do so. I mean, really, do so. But the problem is not that we are not doing the right things in our lives. That's the symptom. Everything that we do to try to correct what we're doing in our lives, to have good thoughts rather than bad thoughts, to have good actions rather than bad actions, to do good rather than bad, and so forth, that although these things can be, are, in fact, greatly to be desired, that we turn the other cheek, that we open our heart and be generous and loving and so forth. But they are doing these things, if we can find a way to do so, and I'm not certain that that's even possible, but doing these things will not in any way, shape, or form deal with the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem is not what we're doing. It's not that we're bad people rather than good people. The fundamental problem is this false belief that I am this life, this image of myself, and that false belief is the source of all the energy that goes into forming the personality that wants to hold on to what's good and get rid of what's bad. And it is the energy of that conviction that I am at stake in this life that causes all of the internal and external warfare, all of it. So it's not that I think that good deeds are bad or even irrelevant. They are, God knows the world needs good deeds and love more than it needs anything else. But that good deeds and bad deeds are not the problem. The problem is this lie. And it's my experience, and it's the experience apparently of you as well, and of most of the people that I've heard back from who have tried this, that strangely and unexpectedly and without any way to kind of understand how it happened, strangely, this internal warfare dies out. This undercurrent of fearfulness and anxiety, lest I not be loving, dies out. And when that dies out, so too does the whole array of aggression and greediness and self-service, and it is the nature of reality to be open, to be absolutely open, to have no resistance to anything. So that as the light of reality destroys this belief, it's to be expected that we would become better people, easier to get along with, not going around robbing banks or doing any of the other things that people do. So if you can turn the other cheek, do so, really. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. If you can be generous to others, do so, really, really do so. If you can love one another, love one another. If you can be helpful and open-hearted and all of that, please do so. But while you're doing that, look to see what you are. While you're doing all of that, look to see in what way you are hurt or helped by any of it. Because it's the truth that matters. It's the truth that will free us from this despicable lie that we are these self-images. I hope I'm making that clear. Do good. But whether you're doing good or bad, find out what you are. That gets to the problem. That gets to the root of it. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, most teachers do also teach that they call it emptiness or whatever, but they say, you know, that's the root of samsara. And so it's difficult even to develop any other kind of qualities unless you've actually got that, because like you say, you're still playing within the field of delusion, and it's kind of by its very nature negative, by, you know, grasping at good and bad. However, they still, as you're saying, yeah, they emphasize the good and you know, moral conduct, and you know, try to do as much as you can for others, and because somehow that also relaxes the mind and frees the mind, and also creates conditions for you to thrive and have the space to actually, you know, do what this, you know, meditate ultimately on reality itself or directly on what is. So yeah, it's good to hear you speaking about that, because it can be a bit. I was a bit disturbed when I heard that. Well, I remember some woman asked you, I can't remember her name, sorry, my name, you know, oh, is it okay if you're bad, sort of thing. And then you kind of said, yeah, it's okay, don't worry about it, which is okay in a way, but then you sort of hear the cheer in the background of all these people, and thinking, oh, God, like, you know, I don't know if that's how useful that is, you know, so I guess that's where that concern came from.
I really want to be clear on this. It is my experience that nothing that you do within the mind, you know, except maybe a little bit of meditation, can't help you in this endeavor at all. I mean, it can't. I want to get one thing clear that you said. You said that once you get this, it's much easier to be good, and that's true. Except that you're not really getting anything. You see, and it is the misunderstanding that we're trying to get something. That's just one of the many thoughts that are endlessly rising and falling, trying to describe what's going on and what I need and what I don't have. You're not trying to get anything. I tell you, really, it's less than that. All that's needed is to open the window, so that the light of reality shines through, not so that you get that because you are that, but because that light, that clear seeing of reality, destroys the false belief that you are this life. And it is the destruction of that belief that we're after. And nothing that's done within the context of that belief can do anything other than to strengthen that belief. The only thing that destroys it is the light of reality, nothing else. And which is not to say don't do good. the fact that you're doing bad doesn't keep you from seeing the reality of what you are, and seeing the reality of what you are will destroy the whole basis for your being bad in the first place. It's a fine line there. You're not getting anything. That's not the point of this. The point of this is to just see, just look. And the looking does it all. The receiving of that light does it all. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I did, John. That's well put. I possibly didn't word it properly. I understand it's letting go. It's what a lot of people call penetrating the delusions, or removing the clouds, and then the self-shining reality is of your own being is and always is and always has been. However, there's, I guess, yeah, it gets confused when you say that's getting something, because clearly it's really actually removing something. Yeah, that's a good point.
But of course, it's not even removing something, it's just seeing. Just that, just seeing. There's no complication to it. There's no, subtle there's nothing that can be said about it. It's just seeing. And the seeing is all that's needed.
Yeah, that's good.
And, and the other thing is that whenever I'm talking, I always, the things I say, I'll bet you, I would say that probably 75% of them are, I'm saying the wrong thing. And there doesn't seem to be anything I can say about that or do about that, because it's just his personality. But the speaking like this, there's really no such thing as saying something wrong, like not being clear about what you said, because everything works. Everything works to provide a context in which we can together look at this reality. Everything. Mistakes, successes, everything. So thank you so much for talking to me, Chris. I hope I see you again. Is there anything else?
I also appreciate not getting too bogged down in the specifics of what, actually I come from a background of very analytical and very precise reasonings and all this sort of stuff, which is another method, and it's quite interesting and wondrous to listen to you, and because, I mean, I think you need people generally, when we're listening to teachings like this and so on, if you just have the pure intention of wanting to see the truth, just that alone has a magical kind of effect, and you don't get too caught up in the particulars. And I have to say, just listening to you is quite amazing. I've had a few teachers that have done this to me, but not many. But just listening without even listening too intently, just sort of having that in the background as a noise, has a great effect on me, and I could just sit there and meditate with it. So it's lovely. I appreciate just the general intention and also the allowance to say things not necessarily so accurately, but to appreciate the intention behind it.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. You're very welcome. It's my joy to hear if the things that I do or my presence in people's lives in any way encourages them to look at what's real. So thank you, Chris. I hope we talk again. It's been very good. Okay, well, I think we're going to call this a day, or a meeting. It hasn't been a full day. I love this. It just, every time we come here like this and meet, look at all these people and all these places. Every time we come here like this and meet, it just kind of takes my breath away that we have this technology at our disposal whereby it's possible to, well, do what we're doing. We're hoping that we can implement some even better technology in the future, maybe later this year. But this is just such a gift, so wonderful. And opportunity for me to hear from you like this, to be able to speak with you like this, to be able to, it's just breathtaking to me. I am so grateful. You know, it's true, and others have noticed that I have the one driving energy in this life is to somehow make this offer clear enough and comprehensible enough that anybody can hear it. Those of us with a spiritual bent, we will see its spiritual implications and its spiritual connections and so forth. Those of us who have no spiritual understanding or experience whatsoever will see clearly and directly the light that's shown on the reality of existence in this world by looking for what's real. And that is the energy. That's the energy that keeps this life going, I think, is this desire to find a way to get clearer, to get closer to the bone, less complicated, less sophisticated. And it's only by speaking with you, whether by reading your emails or speaking with you in person or speaking with you in this magnificent venue, it's only by speaking with you that my expression can be sharpened, that the unnecessary bits can be carved away as I see how you receive what I say, and how you receive what I offer, and what your reaction to it is. So thank you, thank you. Thank you for meeting with me. Thank you for speaking with me. Thank you for writing to me. I am the luckiest of men. I'm sitting here now as I speak to you, and we're in our little office in our little house in Little Ojai, where we have the bay windows on this little office, and I'm looking out I can't see the mountains because of the clouds. I'm looking out at the gray, cloudy sky, and the vegetation and the beauty all around us. I am so lucky. Thank you so much. Stick with it. Whenever it occurs to you, catch a glimpse of yourself, the reality of yourself, not somebody else's idea of what you are, not my idea of what you are, not the Buddha's idea of what you are, but the reality of what you are. It's not hard. I mean, you're here. You're always accessible. You're always available to yourself. So just over time, as you think of it, see if you can't catch a glimpse of that, just out of the corner of your eye. Let the light in. Thank you for this meeting. Thank you for this time. I am, as always, totally at your service. Please stick around because Carla wants to speak to you about the arrangements for the small group that she said something about earlier. I'm really looking to that, forward to that too. So thank you again. Be well. Love one another. Om Shanti.